This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa's live coverage of the U.S. election this week. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington, and my colleague Leonard Mudu is here with me in our Washington studio. And this is Election Day in the United States. Here's what's coming up.
And I pledge to listen to people who disagree with me. Because, you see, I don't believe people who disagree with me are the enemy.
Also, the election campaigns are getting ready for tonight's election watch events. And how do the two presidential candidates differ in their approach to relations with African nations? All these and more coming up on Africa News Tonight's special one-hour election news program. Today is Election Day in the United States. All eyes are on the U.S. presidential race between the Republican Party candidate, former President Donald Trump, and his Democratic Party rival, Vice President Kamala Harris. Today is the last day of voting in the U.S. elections. Political polls show candidates Donald Trump and Kamala Harris in a close race. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has the story.
Kamala Harris spent the last days of her campaign in the swing state of Michigan, meeting with voters at a Detroit chicken and waffle restaurant and speaking at a local church, where she said voters in her Democratic Party, commonly associated with the color blue, are being joined by voters from the Republican Party who are associated with red.
I see a nation determined to turn the page on hatred and division and chart a new way forward. As I travel, I see Americans from so-called red states to so-called blue states who are ready to bend the arc of history toward justice.
Donald Trump campaigned in the swing state of North Carolina, where he told supporters he's confident of an Election Day win.
We have a beautiful lead. All we have to do, Mike, all we have to do is go out on Tuesday and vote, vote, vote.
Trump told supporters that their opponents are already trying to steal this election.
They cheat on elections, and you call them on it, and they want to put you in jail. Think about it. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen, but I love it. You know why? Because we've proven something, we've shown something, and we're going to get it fixed, and we got to win this election.
At that rally, Trump again suggested violence against political opponents, this time the media. Harris says this election is about more than partisan politics and those who she says, quote, seek to deepen divisions, sow hate, spread fear, and cause chaos.
And I pledge to listen to people who disagree with me. Because, you see, I don't believe people who disagree with me are the enemy. In fact, I'll give them a seat at the table because that's what strong leaders do.
More than 75 million Americans have already voted in this election. That's nearly half the total who voted 4 years ago. Public opinion polls show a close race, with the closing New York Times Siena College survey showing voters equally split at 48% for both Trump and Harris. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
VOA White House correspondent Patsy Widakuswara will be at Howard University here in Washington tonight as the vote tallies come in. She's on the line now to talk about what's going on. Hello, Patsy. Thank you for joining us. Tell us what is happening on the ground and why is the Harris campaign going to be waiting for results at Howard University?
Well, right now, the Howard University campus, which is her alma mater, is not yet open to press, but we're already here waiting to be allowed to get in, which is in about 1 hour. From the campaign, their mood is focused on staying calm and confident as the process goes through. They are saying that they're prepared to counter Republican attempts to suppress votes and claim fraud. And they're also fully aware of issues surrounding election certification and legal challenges that will almost certainly come from the Trump side. Why Howard University? As I mentioned before, this is her alma mater, so she chose this to highlight her personal and political connections to the institution. She was shaped by her experiences studying here, where she developed her political views, forged ties with the Black community, including through her sorority. And Harris rarely highlighted her race during the campaign, but of course Howard University carries this symbolic significance because it has been a center for African-American culture, activism, and leadership. And so this is where the action is happening. All the stage has been set up. Students have been told not to come to campus for classes for this week. Everything's going to be online, and we'll see what happens as the day progresses.
So we know that there will be a crush of news media, Harris supporters, and campaign workers at the site. What sort of preparation are underway for the crowd, and what is expected for tonight?
Well, in terms of security, of course, there's barricades everywhere. There's police cars everywhere. You can't get in unless you have your credentials. But, you know, this is a student area. So around the perimeter, we can still see students in their Howard University campus sweatshirts, drinking coffee, reading books, and so on. But tonight, it's going to be much more different. There's going to be higher and tighter security. And also, depending on how the election goes, you know, we can either find out immediately if the polls are completely wrong and either Harris wins decisively, in which case election results could be known tonight, or polls are completely wrong and Trump wins decisively and we can know by tonight as well. But there's also as likely a possibility that the polls are correct and it will be a very, very tight race. And we will not know by tonight whether the election has been won by one candidate or another. In either case, the Harris campaign is preparing this as a watch party. We are expecting her as well as Governor Tim Walz to be here tonight to watch as election results come in.
Okay, great. Thank you for joining us, Patsy. Thank you very much.
As you can imagine, there's a lot of excitement here in the U.S. around the election. The campaign teams and supporters for both presidential candidates are gathering at their election night headquarters to watch for the results come out. Donald Trump and his team will be gathered at his Florida home and private club, Mar-a-Lago, in the town of Palm Beach. VOA senior national correspondent Carolyn Persutti is in Florida, and she's on the phone to tell us what she's seeing there. Welcome to African News Tonight, Carolyn.
Thank you so much, Yehaya. It's good to talk to you.
So why is the Trump campaign going to be waiting for results at Palm Beach?
I'm actually looking at the Palm Beach County Convention Center. It is in the backdrop right now. That is where everyone will be gathering. It'll turn into Trump headquarters this afternoon after the votes are counted. This is where former President Donald Trump, former First Lady Melania, all of his staff, all of his volunteers will gather for what they hope is a victory party. Right across the street is an area called Freedom of Expression, and that is in the median. It's a grassy area for protesters. There aren't any yet. In fact, there are very high, I would say, oh my goodness, maybe 8 feet tall, very strong metal gates and fencing around this convention center. Very strict security. You have to remember that this is a candidate who had two assassination attempts on his life earlier in the campaign. So they are taking this extremely seriously. No one allowed into the convention center without pre-registering those who were invited and also those of us in the media with credentials. Trump last night kind of crisscrossing the country a bit, finished up his day in Michigan, also appeared in North Carolina, Pennsylvania being that all-important electoral state, the swing state to watch. It has 19 electoral votes. It's also where Harris visited 5 different cities yesterday. Now, remember, these crucial swing states are the ones that we will be watching. Trump trying to get young male voters out. He appeared for 3 hours on a Joe Rogan podcast. Rogan, a very popular podcaster, number one on Spotify, 80% of his listeners are male. So he appeared on J.D. Vance, his vice presidential nominee, also appeared on that podcast. But the real key for Trump will be motivating those young white male voters to to actually get out and vote, because as a group, they don't. So that's what Trump, in his last push, was trying to do. Last night, if you heard him at his very final rallies, he said, "Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago?" That's the key phrase that he began his rallies with. That's what he's trying to drive home today with the voters. We'll see how that turns out. We will be here forever until this election is over. No one really expects a winner by tonight, but we'll see. And we'll see how the Trump campaign translates that win here at the convention center.
VOA senior national correspondent Carolyn Persutti, thank you for your input.
I'm glad to be with you.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight and our special election coverage on VOA's Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Lina Mudu. For more coverage of the U.S. elections, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. You also can check out voanews.com. This week, we are focusing on the U.S. elections. Now, let's take a closer look at the two presidential candidates. In just over 9 years, former and perhaps future President Donald Trump has reshaped the Republican Party in an increasingly divided country. VOA's Tina Trin looks at Trump's attempt at a historic political comeback.
The Fox News Decision Desk can now project that former Vice President Joe Biden
has been elected President of the United States.
It was supposed to be the end. But when the end came, Donald J. Trump, 45th president of the United States, wasn't ready to admit defeat.
If you count the legal votes, I easily win. If you count the illegal votes, they can try to steal the election from us.
Trump urged supporters to prevent Congress from certifying those results on January 6, 2021.
We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
What resulted was a scene previously unimaginable in America that led to his second impeachment. Trump's unwillingness to take no for an answer was on brand for a man who has always burned convention.
I think what you see is somebody who has incredible confidence in his own intuition.
Russ Mutner and Suzanne Craig are New York Times investigative reporters and co-authors of Lucky Loser, an unflattering look at how Trump fashioned himself into a self-made billionaire.
He has not, since the early 80s, really trusted people who have subject area expertise in almost anything. He will always overrule them to make things the way he wants them to turn out.
Trump's buildings were emblazoned with his name in large gold letters, a brash display of his ambition and self-promotion.
He was worth $200 million when he would talk. It was the interview he gave to the New York Times, and that grew to $1 billion when he was talking to 60 Minutes a decade later.
Trump excelled at drawing attention and cultivating a brand for himself as a dealmaker. He made millions licensing his name. But behind the success were troubles. His companies filed for bankruptcy 6 times. His casinos lost money and were shuttered. Trump rebounded with his TV show, The Apprentice, which led to his biggest role yet.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am officially running for President of the United States. And we are going to make our country great again.
Unapologetic and unfiltered, Trump was a polarizing nationalist candidate.
When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
As president, Trump appointed 3 Supreme Court justices who helped overturn federal abortion rights.
The U.S. death toll now above 150,000.
In early 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic tested Trump. He fast-tracked the development of life-saving vaccines, but he also appeared to suggest that scientists study injecting bleach to kill the virus. With over 9 million Americans infected and a death toll exceeding 230,000, voters that November chose Joe Biden as their next president. Out of office, Trump faced multiple criminal indictments and is the first former president to be a convicted felon. And yet, he has never been more popular than he is now. Surviving 2 assassination attempts this year has only strengthened the bond between him and his supporters.
God has a plan for Trump, and he absolutely was spared for some purpose and reason, and hopefully it's to become the 47th president.
American politics has never been the same since Donald Trump entered the field. And the man who once co-authored The Art of the Comeback may now be engineering one of the biggest in American history. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Emerging from one of the most diverse liberal regions of the United States, Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris has navigated a political course between tough enforcer of the law and reformer. VOA's Matt Dibble has this profile from Oakland, California.
My mother was a brilliant, 5-foot-tall, brown woman with an accent.
Born in 1964, Kamala Harris's story begins in the diverse and progressive neighborhoods of the San Francisco Bay Area. Her immigrant parents, Shyamala Gopalan from India and Donald Harris from Jamaica, met in Berkeley, California, where the two gifted graduate students arrived to study at the University of California.
Here it is to give you a message of hope.
1960s Berkeley was a center of civil rights and peace activism. Harris has said her earliest memories are of being taken to rallies in a stroller. By 1970, the Harris' marriage had ended. Shyamala Gopalan, with her two daughters, found an apartment to rent in an area of Berkeley known as the Flatlands.
So they lived above the daycare center, above Shelton's daycare, had a modest 2-bedroom, 1-bath apartment.
Childhood friend Carol Porter first met Harris at the school bus stop.
We were the second class to desegregate Berkeley public schools.
Harris went on to Howard University, a historically black college, and then law school. At a time when record levels of black men were incarcerated in California, she took a job as a prosecutor, a role often viewed negatively in the African-American community.
She wanted to go in and change things so that people weren't being prosecuted the way that they were based on systemic and structural racism.
In 2002, Harris took on the incumbent in a race for San Francisco district attorney.
There had never been a woman district attorney. She was really an underdog. But from the beginning, she had something very special.
Harris won the close race and set to work increasing convictions and prison time for violent offenders, while steering those convicted of first-time nonviolent crimes into her rehabilitation program called Back on Track. Elected Attorney General of California in 2010, she pressured U.S. banks into a $20 billion settlement over deceptive lending practices, took on the cross-border drug trade and human traffickers, and advocated for marriage equality. In 2016, Harris was elected to the U.S. Senate, where she quickly rose as a powerful voice on issues of immigration, health care, and criminal justice reform. Known for her sharp questioning during hearings and her ability to hold powerful leaders accountable, Harris became a prominent figure on the national stage. But in a 2020 run for president, Harris's campaign struggled to find direction amid staff chaos.
There's definitely been stories about high staff turnover, inability to keep talented people in her orbit.
Biden won the nomination and ultimately asked Harris to join the ticket as his vice president. The two went on to victory, making her the first woman and the first person of color to win that office. Faced with a surge of migrants attempting to cross the U.S. southern border, Vice President Harris engaged with regional leaders to address instability and poverty. She quickly became a political target.
She was supposed to be the one that was in charge of securing our border, and I don't even know if she's been down there yet.
Harris has grown more comfortable serving as an emissary on the world stage, emphasizing support and soothing tensions. And in a career defined by breaking barriers and exceeding expectations, Harris rose again, becoming the Democratic nominee for president when Joe Biden unexpectedly dropped out of the race. Matt Dibble, VOA News, Oakland, California.
As the U.S. presidential race nears its end, some American expatriates in Mozambique, Nigeria, and the Democratic Republic of Congo share their perspectives on staying engaged from afar and reflect on the election's potential impact.
Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I'm Daniel Ariak Michael in Yaytown.
On the perception of the U.S. system of election, the whole world is looking forward to the U.S. general election come 5th of November 2024. My views on the U.S. election is that the two comrades should adhere free, fair, and credible elections for the people of America. Therefore, I urge the two parties, that is to say, the Democratic nominee Kamala Harris and the Republican Donald Trump, to exercise patience for whoever loses the election for the betterment of the people of America and the whole world. Thanks.
I'm calling people to find out if they got the ballot, the token to vote, because they can ask. There are millions of Americans living outside of America, and their vote can make a difference.
I think that this system of only having two candidates is not very good. Bipartisan doesn't give you any other option.
I believe to vote when you are not in the U.S., we have to understand and we have to understand that the U.S. is represented, for example, here in the DRC through the embassy. The embassy is American territory. That means anyone who is eligible to vote have to go and be informed by the embassy. Just resource itself from the embassy. The embassy will lead them out to vote. I would say democracy the development of the country. Justice to be applied, human right to be respected.
Me, definitely, as an American that has lived overseas for so long, a lot of times I do look at foreign policy and how the foreign policy affects those where I live. And also, I think the foreign policy really can have an impact on Americans living overseas.
Thanks for listening to our special election coverage on VOA's Africa News Tonight. Coming to you from our Washington, D.C. studios, I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
I'm Lina Ahmoudou. You can find more coverage of the U.S. elections on voaafrica.com as well as voanews.com. You will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more.
This year's U.S. election is the most important election with a global impact. And here at VOA Africa, we are dedicated to delivering to you the latest news.
VOAAfrique.com, pour une élection historique, Kamala Harris va faire face à
Donald Trump.
And Kamala Trump, waxay aad hadda ugu noqonayaan gobolada la isku xira immigration iyo jabte.
Esta é uma eleição histórica nos Estados Unidos.
Electoral College.
From TV programs to radio broadcasts and digital coverage, VOA Africa has been delivering accurate news and information. So stay with us for continued coverage of this country's historic election.
Today, on Election Day, I talked to Sade Arage, journalist and blogger for Mosseb Times, regarding a survey she conducted on Ethiopian-American views on the 2024 U.S. election.
Primarily, we're talking about a population that includes both immigrants and U.S.-born, that is about 500,000, 600,000 people, and of that, 200,000 to 250,000 is U.S.-born, and roughly 35% of this group is under 18, 65% above 18, and of that group, 45 to 55% are naturalized citizens. And as you may already know, the largest population is in Washington, D.C., followed by L.A., Minnesota, and Texas. So the battleground state that has an Ethiopian population is Georgia. And there's a population of about 15 to 20,000, a mix of new arrivals and long-term residents, with many living in like DeKalb, Fulton, Gwinnett, Cobb, and Rockdale counties. And so I surveyed Ethiopian Americans' views and concerns about this 2024 election. And the majority of the responses came from Maryland and Virginia.
Give me a breakdown of the survey in a nutshell.
Of the 9 policies or topics impacting the decisions of those who took the survey, foreign policy was at the top of the list. Then second came in the changes to taxes and government spending. Third, immigration policy. Fourth was ethnic equality. And then fifth, abortion policy. And so the summary breakdown in a nutshell is 89% of participants are registered voters, with 29% leaning towards Trump, 50% backing Kamala Harris, 13% still undecided, and 7% striking on local voting only. They pretty much are just going to stick to local voting. Most respondents have been U.S. citizens for over 10 years and are in the age range of like the 35 to 54 age group. They said their views of candidates were mostly shaped by watching debates and news coverage. And then they also did some of their policy research and things like that.
Sade Arage, journalist and blogger for MOSEP Times. She talked to me from Washington, D.C.
Africans are waiting eagerly for the U.S. election results and comparing U.S. involvement in Africa under Democratic and Republican parties. Under President Biden, the African Union was admitted as a permanent member of the G20 group of economies, and a flurry of U.S. officials were deployed to Africa, including Vice President Kamala Harris, although U.S. trade with Africa was only $45 billion compared with $254 billion between Africa and China. Former President Donald Trump established the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation to counter China by promoting private sector investment in Africa and elsewhere. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy what could a Trump administration or Harris administration bring to U.S. relations with Africa.
A Trump administration, I think, would be more inward-looking. It would be more isolationist and more resistant to international frameworks to engage the world, and in particular Africa. So I fear under Trump, we would see actually even less engagement with Africa and even less effort for the United States to engage with the U.S. International Finance Corporation. And I'm specifically saying that in relation to the high tariffs that Trump is proposing for goods not only from China, but from foreign countries, and Africa would be included. And I also fear then for the implementation of AGOA, which is also due for renewal, and Trump's seriousness around that. I might tend to see a better engagement with Kamala Harris within internationalists, more of a multilateral cooperative framework, and then possibly re-engagement with the U.S. International Finance Corporation with a renewal of AGOA under better terms and less tariffs on international trade and better access for African goods and services into the U.S. market. So I really see two different visions in terms of engaging Africa. I think Trump would generally be more transactional and based on U.S. interests, and Africa would go much lower down the scale of priorities. And I think maybe Kamala might advance more enhanced engagement with the continent.
Some experts said that Kamala Harris could have closer connections to Africa, especially that during her visit to 3 African countries last year, she promised to unveil the partnership of digital access in Africa to connect 1 billion people to the internet by the year 2030. They said if Trump is elected, Africa may receive less attention because he is focused on America first. What's your take on that?
I think it's a bit simplistic to assume that with Trump, we would have necessarily less of engagement with the continent, because Trump is a very transactional leader. So I think it will really depend on each individual African country and how they are able to lobby the White House in a Trump administration to advance whatever interest that is. So, for example, countries like Egypt, which are central to the Middle East process, and with setting up peace with Israel, might receive a lot more attention. South Africa, of course, because of its economy, Nigeria, because of the oil, Kenya, because of the trade, they might receive a lot more attention from Trump in a transactional basis than the more neglected countries, maybe say Niger or Chad or even Sudan, which is currently facing, you know, a civil war. But I do think Kamala Harris will be looking to not only increase this element of digital access, but also to try and bridge that gap in terms of competition between the United States and China and the United States and Russia in Africa. I see, again, Trump being able to re-engage with the continent, but again, on a transactional basis in terms specifically around checking and containing China's access to critical minerals. For example, around strategic minerals in the Great Lakes region, access to petrochemical hydrocarbons in countries like Nigeria and Guinea-Bissau, and also more use of hard power in terms of thinking about Donald Trump around reinforcing AFRICOM and these defense treaties to counter radical jihadism. So whereas both administrations might be centered on U.S. interests when they engage Africa and try to check other powers influencing the continent, be that China or Russia, I think the way they would do that would be different. Kamala Harris might focus more on international multilateral frameworks in trying to have the United States leadership establishing global norms and addressing U.S. interests on the continent. But I think a Trump foreign policy would be very inward-looking, very isolationist, and might only engage Africa on very key and specific issues.
That was David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, speaking to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawy.
As you heard, today is the last day to vote in the election, and VOA's Anthony Labruto is in the southern state of Georgia, one of seven states that could go either way in this presidential election. He talked to me from the state of Georgia in the town of Marietta.
So I'm here outside of the Cobb County Civic Center, one of the bigger polling centers here in Marietta, Georgia. And I have to say, there really isn't a lot of excitement happening here today. Around 5 million people have already voted in the state of Georgia for their early voting. So the people are just trickling in. There really isn't those lines that you normally would expect to see ahead of these elections. But they're coming in, able to vote very, very quickly, very, very easily. I've been seeing people come in and out under about 5 minutes.
And Georgia is a swing state, so every vote is very important, right?
Yes, it has become incredibly, incredibly important. Like I had mentioned on Africa 54 yesterday, Joe Biden won this state in 2020 by about 0.2%. I believe that's about 30,000 votes. And in a state of millions of people, it's certainly every vote, like you said, is going to count.
So now that the last day of in-person voting is happening, when can we expect to see results?
So it's a bit of a complicated question. So Georgia, the Georgia Supreme Court actually for Cobb County just recently issued a ruling saying that around 3,000 ballots that were sent out after October 30th will have to be brought in by about 7 p.m. today in order to be counted. All votes have to be counted, according to the ruling, by about 7 p.m. today, starting at 7 p.m. today. So we can expect to see potentially some exit polls, some preliminary polling around that time. But Georgia is also hand counting all of their ballots this year, so it's certainly going to be a little bit more of a slower process, but it'll be a little bit more of a secure process. So I'm anticipating probably a little bit later tonight that we'll see actually some concrete results.
VOA's Anthony Labruto reporting from Georgia, from the town of Marietta.
I'm Lynn Ormond.
You're listening to our special election coverage on VOA's Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington.
And I'm Lee Nahmoudou, also in Washington. For more coverage of the U.S. elections, please see voaafrica.com. There you will find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. You also can check out voanews.com. This week, we are focusing on the U.S. elections.
And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Let us know what you think, and we might share your thoughts on the air.
Americans will wrap up voting today to elect the new occupant of the White House. The presidential race between Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump is so tight, however, that their teams are on alert for the legal battles that might ensure to define the election's outcome. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias explains.
Earlier this year, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump told several media outlets that if the results of the November 5th presidential election are, quote, honest, fair, and free, he would accept them. Election officials are confident the voting process will be fair, secure, and transparent. But the former president has increasingly voiced concern about his opponents possibly committing fraud.
If we can keep that cheating down, because there are a bunch of cheats, if we can keep that cheating down, we're going to have a tremendous victory.
During an interview that aired last month on NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, Vice President Kamala Harris told NBC News' anchor Hallie Jackson that her team will be ready to go if Trump loses and attempts to subvert the election.
We will deal with election night and the days after as they come, and we have the resources and the expertise and the focus on that as well.
The Republican National Committee has in place a so-called election integrity program in battleground states. Its lawyers have filed more than 100 lawsuits over perceived voting rules irregularities, but many have been shut down in court. Democrats have launched their own legal efforts, including suing to prevent potential delays in the certification of Georgia's state election results. In tight presidential races such as this year's, legal battles are expected. Most of them will be fought in swing states, analysts predict. Democracy analyst with the Bipartisan Policy Center, Michael Thorning, via Skype.
At the polling place, we often see contests over whether or not ballots are being handled properly. In the post-election day period, there are disputes about whether or not individual voters are actually eligible and whether they're provisional ballots should be cast and counted.
Anyone who claims fraud, however, must present proof, legal experts warn. Former Pennsylvania judge Robert Gracie is a practicing attorney and member of the nonpartisan organization Keep Our Republic. He spoke via Skype.
Lawyers, be careful what you allege. Make sure that you can prove it. Otherwise, they may be subject to discipline, as we've seen growing out of the 2020 challenges.
Trump's former lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, for instance, was disbarred for spreading baseless claims that the 2020 election was stolen. The legal battles could delay the outcome of the presidential election. But if on Tuesday night the results are clearly in favor of one presidential nominee over another by some noteworthy margin, analysts say it will be much harder for the opposing party to contest those results. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
As in most countries, the process of collecting and counting all the votes is complicated in the U.S. As in most countries, the process of collecting and counting all the votes is complicated in the U.S. because it varies from state to state and because of the size of the country. While some places will close voting in about 8 hours, the far western states of Hawaii and Alaska will be voting for 5 or 6 hours past that. VOA national correspondent Steve Herman is in Gwinnett County, Georgia, just outside the city of Atlanta, to observe the voting and talk to people there about the election. He spoke a short time ago with editor Kate Pound Dawson about the voting process there.
Here in Gwinnett County, Georgia,
The polls are supposed to close at 7 o'clock. Now, customarily, if somebody's in line at that time, they will be allowed to vote. And we were told by the Gwinnett County election supervisor that all those ballots that had previously come in over many weeks, whether they were early voting in person or mail ballots, they're ready to push the button for tabulations exactly at 7 p.m. And there's a substantial percentage of people, not only here in Gwinnett County and all of Georgia, but across the country, that voted early. So in the places where they're allowed to start that count exactly when the polls close, we'll start to see a significant percentage of numbers of the ballots being displayed, and we'll have a early indication of how things may be trending.
Now, you mentioned the early voting. Has it been a big push there in Georgia? Has that state particularly seen a lot of early voters?
Yes, we're looking at pretty much record numbers, at least for Gwinnett County. And of course, it's very hard to compare it to 4 years ago when we were in the pandemic. That wasn't obviously considered a normal election year. But what's significant this time around is normally it was the Democrats who were pushing the early voting, and the Republicans were more into not mailing in their votes and showing up on election day. But what we're seeing, not only here but in other parts of the country, that Republicans were also substantially voting early, or where they're allowed to mail in ballots, absentee ballots, that sort of thing.
In Georgia, you mentioned that we could start seeing some results relatively early in the evening. When does the state expect to have everything completely wrapped up?
Well, completely wrapped up, that's a huge question, because what we'll be seeing tonight and tomorrow will be unofficial numbers. Then all of this data goes to the Secretary of State. I believe that at that level, they have until November 12th to submit everything. And then, of course, we begin converting those votes into electoral votes. And that's a whole new state and national process. But I don't think anybody's expecting, here in Georgia at least, that if it is very, very close, because there's also a grace period for some extra ballots to come in that may have been mailed. I think they have 5 days for those to show up at the election headquarters. So if it's really, really close, because here in Gwinnett County, I know they're expecting the overseas ballots from people that are in the U.S. military and things like that that'll come in later, about 2,000 ballots. So if one person hasn't won any of these races, because remember, it's not just the president that's on the ballot. You've got a whole bunch of state candidates and local elections and ballot questions. So they may not have total results in for a number of days. But for the race, obviously, people around the world are interested in for president of the United States, we can expect, I think, that by sometime early Wednesday or mid-Wednesday, for the state of Georgia at least, we should have a pretty good read on things.
That was VOA correspondent Steve Herman in the southern state of Georgia. He spoke with VOA's Kate Bound Dawson.
The state of California has passed several laws attempting to regulate artificial intelligence. That includes AI used to create realistic-looking but manipulated audio or video known as deepfakes. In this U.S. election season, the aim is to counter misinformation, but it has raised concerns about free speech. From California, Ginia Dulo has our story.
Rijul Gupta is founder of the California company Deep Media. The company is developing technologies to detect content created by generative artificial intelligence. He says these two images illustrate the challenges of knowing what is real. On a computer screen, Gupta shows an image of Donald Trump, holding an I am gay card. It's a hyper-realistic fake. But an image of Joe Biden wearing a Trump 2024 hat is real. Biden wore it briefly at a Pennsylvania fire station.
We think that this is just the beginning, right? That as generative AI continues to get more accessible to everyday users and go beyond just within the realm of state-sponsored activity, we're going to see a massive, massive influx of generative AI misinformation.
As part of efforts to try to get ahead of that misinformation, California has enacted a series of laws, including one requiring social media platforms to screen election-related videos using machine-generated content and either remove them or label them manipulated content. State Assembly member Mark Berman sponsored that law and says he understands concerns about how it might impact free speech rights guaranteed in the U.S. Constitution.
The First Amendment gives you the right to say what you want to. It does not give you the right to put your words in my mouth. And that is what this technology does. And so it's very different than how we think of First Amendment or how we've thought of the First Amendment for centuries.
The law exempts content that is satire or parody. That is not enough for free speech activist David Snyder.
The platforms have their own First Amendment right to make editorial decisions about what is going to be published, what's not going to be published, who to not allow onto the platform and who to allow on the platform as a business.
Eugene Voloch is a First Amendment expert at Stanford University's Hoover Institution. He agrees that deepfakes may deceive voters, but questions the law requiring social media platforms to police themselves.
It places the burden on the platforms, and that might well be seen as unduly restricting speech, because platforms, if faced with the risk of being punished for somebody else's speech, might in closed cases say, well, you know, we're not sure it's a deepfake. Maybe it's true, but we just don't want to risk it, and we'll take it down.
The new laws take effect next year. Voloch says they may be stuck in courts because federal statutes shield online platforms from responsibility for content generated by their users. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, San Francisco.
Our colleague, Evans Zizenga, with the VOA Zimbabwe service, is in Dallas in the southwestern state of Texas. He's been speaking to voters there on the ground. Kennedy Masi is a human rights activist.
I don't have a pick, but I feel that this election is more of a 50-50. You cannot really tell which side is going to win. With early voting coming in, the votes are pretty much seem to be neck-and-neck. So I would just stay neutral at this time, but maybe in the next coming days we might be seeing numbers increasing and seeing where, you know, who's going to win between Madam Kamala Harris and Mr. Trump.
Innocent Nuruza is a youth leader.
What I think about the election, I am sure that it's going to change your life. It's going to change my life as an immigrant who is here. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's going to change. My encouragement to the youth is like, know your position. Mm-hmm. Number one, in terms of politics, you are the voice. Mm-hmm. Don't keep quiet. Say what you want to say. Go and vote. It will change someone's life.
Godfrey Korauni is a political analyst.
I feel so excited to witness an election that is very free, mm-hmm. fair, and transparent. I've never witnessed that before. Back from Africa, where I come from, mm-hmm. we are used to elections that are violent, elections that are disputed, elections where the ruling parties, they take charge of election bodies, which is actually different from what I'm witnessing here. Everyone is given the platform to campaign freely, mm-hmm. without intimidation. Everyone is given equal opportunity to campaign on television. Everyone is given a equal opportunity to meet people. Mm-hmm. It's unlike where we have a situation in Africa where others are bad to campaign, others are bad to meet people, while these others are campaigning. So mm-hmm. it's a totally different. So I'm actually excited to see a free and fair and very transparent process.
We'll be hearing more from voters all week. The United States has voiced concern about tensions in Ethiopia's Amhara state, scene of an insurgency since last year. The country's top diplomat said late Monday. The French news agency AFP reports that in a telephone conversation between U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, Blinken expressed concern about growing violence in Amhara and underscored the need for political dialogue to address Ethiopia's other internal conflicts. The FANNO, a long-standing self-defense militia for the Amhara ethnic group, the second largest in Ethiopia, took up arms in April 2023 after the federal government tried to disarm regional forces.
Hello! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu has ordered the release of 29 children facing the death penalty for alleged treason after they protested against the country's worst cost of living crisis in a generation. The children were arraigned on Friday and have been in detention since August. Activists say they were illegally picked up and have been put through horrifying experiences. The Associated Press reports that four of them collapsed due to exhaustion when they were brought to court on Friday. Their arraignment sparked outrage and renewed concerns about deteriorating human rights in Africa's most populous country.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And in more news from the continent, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi pledged his continued support to the National Army in war-torn Sudan during a meeting with the country's army chief, his office said in a statement. The French news agency AFP reports Sisi called for a ceasefire and sparing the blood of Sudanese brothers during talks with Abdel Fattah al-Burhan late Monday. During their meeting, Sisi reiterated Egypt's continued support for Sudan on all levels to help the country emerge from its crisis, according to the Egyptian presidency. Sudan was plunged into civil war in April last year.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal. Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive...
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. dial the international code +1 then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1 then 202-258-3076.
And that wraps up this special edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Linor Mudu in Washington.
And I'm Yeheyes Wuhib. Join us tomorrow for more expanded coverage of the U.S. election and check out voaafrica.com and voanews.com for the latest updates. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineers, Al Santos and Rob McLean, thanks for choosing the Voice of America. We'll be back tomorrow with more U.S. election news. We'll